This mortal coil.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind.
There we have the character that Michael Douglas played in Wall Street, rhapsodizing about greed and, as he saw it, all of its benefits. But it's also one of the seven deadly sins, a moral transgression, one of the twin killers of true success. It's the excessive selfish desire to possess more wealth, more possessions, more power, more food, or maybe an insatiable urge for just more than one needs or deserves. It's also at the very heart of the survival of our species, even an innate part of our primal instincts as humans. Ridding people of greed is about as impossible as ridding them of blood or bones. So whether we like it or not, greed is part of life on this mortal coil. Tonight, we're taking all we can get from greed, where it comes from, how it drives us, what it makes us do, and where we end up if it takes over. Rachel Brown is going on this journey with us. Rachel's director of the Centre for Philosophy of the Sciences at the Australian National University and editor-in-chief of the Biology and Philosophy Journal. Hello, Rachel. Welcome.
Good evening, Suzanne.
Now, if you were listening to Michael Douglas's character rhapsodizing about greed there, what do you make of what he had to say?
Oh, some of it was kind of on the money. I mean, I think when we think about greed from an evolutionary perspective, you know, natural selection favors survival and reproduction, and resource acquisition and sort of accumulation is pretty key to survival and reproduction of most organisms. If you don't have any resources, you can't have any offspring. And so in some sense, yeah, he's right. You know, evolution, natural selection will select for behaviours which we now would tag for as being greed, at least some of the time.
Right. So where does it come from then? I mean, I don't know how far we can go back and identify the trait, but is your sense that it would have always been with us, Rachel?
Yeah, I mean, our inherited sort of motivational systems and the ones which reward acquisition and protecting resources and competing over resources, those are really evolutionarily ancient. I mean, some biologists and philosophers would even argue that you see that kind of motivational system even in plants, in the sense that, you know, the plant is always trying to get more resources by spreading its roots further and further, you know, and it does that to the detriment of its neighbours. And in some sense, I guess, you know, that's we have the same kinds of systems. In our case, we're rewarded by basically dopamine when we get resources. We get that hit of pleasure, and that drives us. And evolution is selected for that because it results in more offspring. And that's how selection works.
Do you imagine, Rachel, that it is genetically inbuilt or evolved more from environmental factors? I guess in order to seek resources, you must lack them.
Yeah, so, I mean, twin studies show that there's a pretty sort of good level of heritability for traits like competitiveness. The basic motivational drives to do with accumulation of resources, those are really ancient. But if we think about kind of things like, you know, like Michael Douglas was talking about kind of that sort of competitive edge that sort of you might think of in The Wolves of Wall Street. That is partly, that varies between individuals, and what we see is that that's partly varies by genes, but it also varies by people's environment. So one thing we know is that if you grow up in an environment of scarcity, then you're more likely to pay attention to the availability of resources around you and to hoard resources. And I mean, that makes sense, right? If you have grown up in an environment where there isn't very much, then you're going to be more aware of the possibility of what you can gain, but also of losing that. And I think all of us sort of had some experience of what happens when you have that kind of scarcity, say during COVID. You know, remember the great toilet paper hoarding of 2020, that's the kind of environmental impact that can happen on our sort of sense of fairness, but also our ability to be greedy. Because I don't think most people wouldn't have thought that they would behave the way that they did in that context. But under pressure, people will behave in a greedy kind of way.
Yeah, and to see some of the scenes of people literally, you know, practically coming to fist fights in supermarkets over toilet paper, just extraordinary, wasn't it? I mean, is that greed? I mean, can you call that something else?
Well, now we're really getting into a philosophical question. I mean, I think typically we think of greed as acquiring more resources than one really needs to get by. And I guess in that context, it was unclear how many resources we needed to get by. Obviously, those with sort of garages full of toilet paper may have overestimated how much toilet paper one needed to get by. But I can also see that people just didn't know what the requirement was to get through with enough toilet paper. And so I think, you know, that's one of the challenges with any sort of assessment of greed is we all have to decide for ourselves what is enough resources and what would be fair. I think greed is really just the accumulation of resources above what one really needs.
Mm. I'm also thinking of a more recent example, Rachel, with all the buying up of petrol when the crisis in the Middle East began. And I mean, we had quite a conversation and debate about panic buying. Lots of people texting in saying, well, farmers are just being practical. They are putting aside exactly what they're going to need in order to get through, you know, the seeding that they need to do. Which on one hand, you go, totally. While other people are saying, no, that was just being greedy because you didn't need it at that particular moment. So it's very hard to get an objective definition when you've got these kind of marginal questions, I guess, you know, spaces that where it's harder to say that's definitely greedy or that's not greedy.
Yes and no. As philosophers often say, you know, how many grains of sand makes a heap? And it looks a bit like this with greed. I mean, I know how many grains of sand makes a, like I can point to a clear heap, even if I can't tell you between kind of like where there's no heap and the heap begins, right? And it feels a bit like that with greed. There are people who are clearly, I think everyone would say, were greedy. So, I mean, let's say tech bros of certain types we might decide would have far more resources they could ever spend, and we might think that they were greedy. And I think in those look like they're pretty clearly greedy cases, even if we can't sort of draw a clear line between greed and not greed when it comes to, say, petrol hoarding of certain types. I think one of the things that's really interesting about greed is that from an evolutionary perspective, we sort of we're pushed in two directions. So while I've already talked about the basic motivational drives to accumulate resources that we have, humans and other cooperative species also have evolved drives for sharing and for fairness. And so those kinds of drives kind of pull in the opposite direction from the drives to accumulate resources. And in some sense, that's where the concept of greed comes from. It comes from the fact that we're a species which is both driven to accumulate resources, but also fundamental to the way that we live is cooperation and fairness.
And do we see those traits coexisting within the same person who could have some of that drive for greed and for the gathering of resources, but also the drive for sharing and for fairness?
I think we see that all the time. Think about people like Bill Gates. Bill Gates is both one of the richest people alive, but also has given away millions of dollars through the Gates Foundation. Now, in that you're seeing someone who is both being philanthropic and also probably has more wealth than any one person really should have from a fairness perspective. And so I think, you know, you can see both of these things in people. In some sense, as we talked about before, how much people hoard or think that they need is probably shaped by their genetic proclivity, but also their background. And and perhaps the institutions and environment that they live in. So within a kind of modern free market kind of society that we have, we're encouraged to hoard resources and hoard wealth. And so, yeah, that's why we see both of those things.
Rachel Brown is with me. Rachel's the Director of the Centre for Philosophy of the Sciences at the Australian National University and Editor-in-Chief of the Biology and Philosophy Journal. Now, Robin's saying just recently with the oil shortages, how we saw some people filling up half a dozen jerry cans, even though we were asked to only take what you need. That was a perfect example of greed, says Robin. Now, someone's just asking, you referenced a twin study, Rachel. Was that identical or non-identical twins?
So I think that usually twin studies involve identical twins, but you can do heritability studies on non-identical twins, but I'm not actually 100% sure which was in that study.
Now, when you say, too, you can look at competitiveness on a heritability level, I mean, is that something you can actually go down to and see certain genes for it? Or is it you look at somebody's behaviour and can see that that behaviour would indicate that they are highly competitive?
Yeah, so, I mean, a trait like competitiveness is a complex trait. In fact, you know, like greed, it's made up of all sorts of different aspects of our psychology. And as I say, some of those are going to be more conscious than others. And so when we do a study about something like competitiveness and heritability, typically what they're interested in is the amount of the behaviour which can be attributable to their someone's genes. And so they compare how people behave on certain types of psychological tests to do with competitiveness. They compare how much it's similar to those they're related to and how much it's not, to those who are not related.
Now, this is an interesting SMS. We were advised by our DIG director on a field trip where food supply wasn't optimal, that hunger changes everything and you get greedy. I didn't believe him. I was really surprised to find out that after a few weeks when we came across yummy treats, no one wanted to share them.
No, that's what the studies show. I mean, that yes, scarcity of resources changes people's attitude towards those resources. That is 100% true.
And, I mean, then do you still call it greed or do you call it a fight for survival? I mean, surely that the label changes depending on the situation you're in.
I think, you know, it's true that in that situation, I think it starts to look less like greed. And this actually comes back to, I think, some pretty good studies about various types of species looking at their aversion to inequality. And so in those cases, so they do these studies where basically the famous one actually is with some capuchins. So they taught the capuchins that they would do a task and then they would exchange a pebble for a reward, and they would either get a cucumber, which they thought was okay, or a grape, which they really, really liked. And what the researchers did was they wanted to see the response of the capuchins if they watched another capuchin do the same task but get the better reward than them. So they would both do the same task. One would get a cucumber, one would get a grape. And the one with the cucumber would often basically throw the cucumber at the researcher, get very upset and irate. And they've done the study since looking at exactly kind of what will change the response of the individuals in the test. And it turns out, you know, if they think if there's equal work and unequal pay, the capuchins, which is a type of monkey, will get upset. And I think, you know, humans, you see that kind of aversion to inequality and inequity in humans too. And so in a case like you've described, I don't think really you're seeing greed, you're seeing, as long as the resources are being distributed equally and everyone has an equal amount for that they deserve, then I think most people would say that's not greed. What's greedy is when you see one person having more than others. And in fact, if we think about that case that we talked about, that you mentioned with the petrol and the jerry cans, I think that's why people get upset about that, is because it looks like one person is getting more than they deserve. And that looks, I mean, if we think about what the definition of greed would be, it would be having more than you need or more than you deserve.
Well, I mean, more than you need is one thing, but what's more than you deserve? I mean, is that debatable?
I think it probably is for sure. I mean, think about, again, we already talked about someone like Bill Gates or large sort of people who run very large companies and have billions and millions of dollars. I mean, it seems like that's definitely more than they need. Is it more than they deserve? Probably. I mean, think arguably, I think most people would say, even if they were extremely hardworking, that they couldn't work to the magnitude of money that they have is not equivalent to the magnitude of work that they do compared to someone else who earns significantly less.
That's right. I mean, I would argue that a sporting star being paid more than a nurse, that that's not people getting the pay that they deserve.
Yeah.
That's to do with the way that our economy is set up. Rachel Brown is here, Director of the Centre for Philosophy of the Sciences at the Australian National University and Editor-in-Chief of the Biology and Philosophy Journal. So I guess if behaviours can be inherited through social learning, and I mean, I think you touched on this earlier, Rachel. I mean, can economic systems effectively teach greed across generations?
Yes. So when we look at different human cultures, they have different norms around resource acquisition, accumulation, and ownership. And they also have different norms around the punishment of excessive accumulation and inequality. And so, yes, the environment that you're in will change that. And so even just today, if we look across the world, there are different, you know, some societies are more individualistic and some are more collectivist. And more collectivist societies expect more sharing. And there's a lot more societal pressure on individuals to share. And that evens up, that pushes against greed. And in fact, you know, for humans, in a way, you know, greed has the potential to undermine a whole pile of aspects of human society, because so much of human society is built on fairness and cooperation. And in fact, you know, we rely on norms of fairness and cooperation to maintain a cohesive society. And so greed, when it becomes really, really when it's acceptable to sort of, for want of a better word, screw over your neighbour, then it threatens actually kind of the bedrock of large-scale human societies, because large-scale human societies are only really possible because we believe that you should be good to your neighbour and that fairness is important.
And yet there are people operating on an entirely different kind of principle. I mean, you know, libertarians who think that they shouldn't necessarily be involved in perhaps helping other people or involved in collectives in order to do that. A very individualistic kind of approach to the world. I'm also thinking too, Rachel, I have a friend who's Dutch, and she's always saying to me that in the Netherlands, you would never boast about property prices or be obsessed with those kinds of things in the way that we are in Australia. She's never heard so much property talk since she's been living here. So, yeah, even individual countries have very different takes on what's acceptable and what's not.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the evidence is that what we would class as greed, I think, varies significantly between cultures. One of the things that's interesting, if we sort of return to the evolutionary question, is that despite the fact that there's sort of selection for almost what we might think of as greed as kind of extreme selfishness, in humans, we're a particularly interesting species because we live in very large societies that are far bigger than we could. I interact with lots of people every day that I'll never ever see again. And evolution, sort of the evolutionary logic would be that we should be out to sort of win against each of those people because we'll never see them again. There's never going to be any comeback. But nonetheless, we still actually, generally, most people behave in a pro-social manner, in a cooperative manner, and actually in a fair manner. And one of the sort of evolutionary sort of conundrums about humans or paradoxes is how that's possible, because evolution should select for selfishness, especially when you're not related to the person and you're not going to see them again. But humans, it seems like we've evolved large-scale cooperation without being related to individuals and without seeing them again. And one of the reasons we think that that's possible is because of the kinds of moral norms around things like greed and cooperation, which characterize most human, all human societies.
Now, if I wonder if the boundaries shift on where we might draw the line at what is greed and what is not greed. In some countries, just having any kind of roof over your head would be perfectly normal. You know, in other countries, we love to have, you know, very expensive houses. But in each country, the definition of what you should expect and what is not greedy but just normal is very different. So our boundaries must be shifting all the time as our societies and economies change.
Definitely. I think there's probably no objective answer to the question of whether someone is greedy or not. It's going to be relative to the context that they're in. I do think one of the challenges we have for anyone kind of in Australia, particularly anyone who's living in a sort of in a middle class life in Australia, is that where we have far more resources than the vast majority of people on earth. And that raises the question, are we all greedy then? Should we all be giving away quite a lot more of our resources than we are, because we're actually accumulating far more than a lot of other people have on earth? But it's not obvious to us because those people aren't nearby to us. But also, as you pointed out, we're in a society that sort of sets a standard for what's acceptable for you to accumulate. And that standard doesn't necessarily reflect that there are people on earth living on less than a dollar a day. And I'm spending $5 on a coffee, you know.
So hypothetically, what would a world look like where we evolved without any greed? How would a human race be driven by selflessness have fared by comparison? Or would we have just died out?
Well, in some sense, human societies actually, I mean, even though greed exists in human societies, human societies, as I said before, are kind of unique for the level of cooperation that we see, particularly amongst unrelated individuals. So the only other species that live in very large groups like we do are insects, eusocial insects that are related to each other. And so if I help someone who's related to me, then I'm actually helping the genes that I carry to get to the next generation. Whereas in human societies, as I said before, we live in these very large unrelated groups. And so that's persisted is because we're pro-social, where we have these moral rules about helping each other. And what's interesting is how that has sort of succeeded over a long period of time without being infiltrated by greed. How come it isn't that, you know, the greedy individuals do better and then they just have more greedy offspring and more greedy, you know, the greed doesn't just beat out all of the goodness in human society over time. And it's unclear why that has happened. Probably it's because of our strong moral norms. Our moral norms are something which has enabled us to have very large social groups, and they're very strong. And so even though some people do exhibit greed or contravene our social norms, they just can't kind of they haven't succeeded in breaking the majority rule of cooperation. But it is a really interesting question. What would happen if you had a fully cooperative society and there was no greed, and would greed kind of infiltrate and take over? And from an evolutionary perspective, it should, because greed should beat cooperation. And one of the big questions for human evolution is how come we've been able to stay cooperative for tens of thousands of years?
I suppose we had to be, though, in the beginning, didn't we? When we were living in the jungle, you couldn't have survived on your own. You needed your tribe and the people around you, I'm sure, to look after you and to help you. So perhaps that tension has been right there since the very beginning. Rachel, it's been so interesting to talk to you. Thank you for philosophising about greed with us here on Nightlife tonight.
Thanks so much, Suzanne.
That's Rachel Brown. Rachel's Director of the Centre for Philosophy of the Sciences at the Australian National University and also Editor-in-Chief of the Biology and Philosophy Journal.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.